Hello, and welcome to Gilmore Ball Z, the podcast where I show my wife Dragon Ball Z, she shows me Gilmore Girls, in the hopes that we find some kind of common ground. I'm Grant.
And I'm Paige.
And this week we watched episode 32 of Dragon Ball Z Kai, and season 2, episode 5 of Gilmore Girls. So, Paige, what happened this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai?
Okay, so this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai, Goku has just beaten,
Birder.
Birder and Raccoon. Birder didn't really matter.
No, he didn't.
At all. And Raccoon. And he is about to square off with Jace, but he leaves them one chance to leave. You can get your friend's medical attention. Get out of here. Don't bother this planet anymore. And instead of that, Jace just ditches. And Goku is completely confused by the fact someone wouldn't help out their friends. And Vegeta decides that the job needs to be finished. And just straight up murders Raccoon and...
Birder,
sure. Let's name our villains after old people hobbies. Captain Ginyu arrives to try to deal with this issue that's happening, along with Jace. And Goku decides that the way to deal with this is to split up. He and Vegeta will fight Captain Ginyu and Jace. And Krillin and Gohan can go and figure out what's going on with the Dragon Balls. The sky hasn't gone dark, the Dragon Balls haven't been summoned yet, so they still have time. Vegeta decides, no, forget that, and peace is out of there. Because his thinking is that if he can get Goku and Ginyu to defeat each other, then that's two more players out of the way between him and the Dragon Balls. We didn't really see more about where Krillin and Gohan getting there or anything like that. The other thing we saw is that Bulma sees the Dragon Balls are all gathered up. Ginyu buried them before he left. And so she's like, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to get the Dragon Balls. I'm going to wish myself home.
Yeah, screw you guys. I'm going home.
Which is basically what Vegeta said. So they're perfect for each other. Meanwhile, the rest of the fight, or the rest of the episode, is pretty much just Goku and Ginyu starting to throw down. And they're both pulling off the whole Princess Bride, I am not left-handed thing, where they're both hiding their true power levels, and so neither one of them is sure what their true power level is. The episode ends with Goku starting a spirit bomb?
Kaioken.
At one point, I'll get this.
Kaioken's a form, spirit bomb's an attack.
Okay. He's doing his Kaioken, and he's at highest count so far at 110,000 points. What is the modifier? Power levels?
Yeah, it's just his power level is 110,000.
Yeah,
there's never any discussion of what an individual power level is.
Before going into the Kaioken, he was running at about 60,000, probably, and Captain Ginyu didn't expect him to get any higher than 85,000, so we'll see where this goes. Grant, what happened this week on Gilmore Girls?
Well, this week on Gilmore Girls, we're back to having pretty clear Rory plot and Lorelai plot. So this week, the Lorelai plot was really more of a Luke plot. Basically, we find out Luke has a sister who is apparently not the most responsible person in the world.
Liz.
And Liz has a son named Jess, who has been getting into trouble, just nondescript trouble. And she doesn't want to deal with it, so she's sending him to go live with Luke.
Yeah, and his dad is out of the picture.
Yeah, no, this kid's dad is out of the picture, and so Jess is coming to town to go stay with Luke for a while. So we get a young Milo Ventimiglia before his turn on Heroes, which makes us our fourth Gilmore Girls superhero to join the fold. So he comes out, and he's a bad boy.
He's surly.
He is. He smokes. He doesn't talk much. He gambles. He steals. He drinks.
Actually, he fails to gamble. He asks Luke to gamble with him, and Luke says no, and that's the end of it.
Yes, but this implies that he will gamble.
Yeah. He just does magic tricks.
He does magic tricks, which is totally something all the bad boys are learning sleight of hand in Stars Hollow, I guess. Generally, obviously hasn't had a good life up to this point, and is kind of done with it.
I think the way Taylor Swift would put it is that she knew he was trouble when he walked in.
She definitely knows he's trouble when he walks in. So Jess is obviously not on board with the program so far. And Lorelai is kind of telling Luke before Jess shows up, like, hey, we don't know what kind of trouble this guy got into. You know, kids can be difficult, especially kids who are coming from rough backgrounds. Are you sure you want to do this? And Luke's saying, I know what I'm doing. Besides, he's family. You gotta help family. You know, don't worry about it. I got it under control. Lorelai invites Luke and Jess over for dinner at their house. Suki and Jackson come over to do all the cooking. It's going to be a great big banquet. And, like, Jess will get to meet Rory, so he'll know somebody his own age, and it'll be great. But, of course, Jess walks in and sees that it's a nice, quaint little home where Suki and Jackson are getting super excited about lemons. And he's like, all right, I'm not having any of this because I'm a jaded 17-year-old. He meets Rory, and you can tell he thinks she's cute. And they talk about books for a little bit, and then he, like, tries to get her to bail. And she's like, no, I don't want to bail. Besides, the food's really good. You might want to stick around. And he says, sure. Lorelai catches him swiping a beer, and so Jess and Lorelai kind of get into an argument. Lorelai tries to be nice, be like, hey, look, I've been where you are before, and even if you're right, and your parents don't understand you, and your life is horrible and all that, like, maybe that's true, but you should give Luke a chance, because he really is trying to do the right thing here. And Jess responds by, you know, oh, implying that Lorelai's sleeping with him, and throwing it back at her, and he's just, you know, he cops an attitude. So this turns into Lorelai and Luke having a big blow-up at each other because Luke accuses Lorelai of being condescending about the whole kids thing. In his defense, she wasn't not being condescending, but she also had a point. They get into a big fight. Jess gets caught stealing money from, like, the collection, the donation bin at the market.
For
building a bridge.
The bridge fund.
And he also steals one of Babette's garden gnomes. So he's just, he's just stealing crap just to steal crap because he's a kid crying for help. And so Luke is interrogating him about like, hey, did you do this? And Jess says no and then kind of blows up at him. So Luke and Jess have a screaming match that ends in Luke pushing Jess into a lake. It's just a great moment of like, oh, leave me alone, fine, I will leave you alone, fine, and they're both walking away, and then Luke just shoves Jess off the bridge into the lake.
Now, that is an iconic moment of Gilmore Girls, where most people who watch the show, you can talk to them about the lake, the push into the lake.
It was well shot, it was funny, it was great. And so that's when Luke kind of realizes he isn't over his head, he and Lorelai make up, and he goes and pretty much puts his foot down with Jess of like, look, you're gonna go to school, you're gonna do as I say, you're gonna quit smoking, you're going to graduate, you're going to work at the diner, blah, blah, blah. You know, tries to put his foot down and Jess just walks off. And he bumps into Rory and, you know, they further cement the fact that Jess has a thing for Rory. And Rory isn't not interested. It wasn't super explicit, especially because Rory does still have a boyfriend right now. But she definitely seemed intrigued by him, even if she isn't necessarily, like, doesn't, like him or anything.
Well, and the thing he brought up is that earlier he said he didn't really read. And then he, like, has stolen her book.
Her book, and makes it clear that he's read it before and everything. So it's like, oh, he's a bad boy.
Oh.
But he likes to read.
Oh,
oh my.
Oh.
So he's a bad boy, but he's intelligent and deep and thoughtful deep down.
Deep down. You just have to get it out.
Yeah. So it's okay, honey. You can change him. So meanwhile, the Rory side was a little less eventful. The Franklin is finally actually a factor in the story. First mentioned in the second episode of the show, and now it's finally actually mattering.
Yeah, I would be curious if there's any backstory on why it didn't show up in the first season.
Yeah, but
I don't know.
She's finally working on the Franklin.
Yeah.
And Paris gives her a really crappy story about, like, the repaving in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And is generally just sort of trying to make her life miserable so she'll quit.
Mm-hmm.
Because Paris just has a nondescript hatred for Rory that is ill-defined. Rory turns around and turns it into one of the best stories of that round of stories. And just generally, you know, does a great job of it. And so she says, oh, okay. The paper advisor, the faculty advisor says, you know, Paris, you should give Miss Gilmore some better stories. She's a really great writer. So Paris finds the way to still do this while being awful and gives Rory the story to interview the teacher who was voted as the most popular by the student populace last year, which is Mr. Medina. And Paris has kind of figured out that Rory is avoiding him because they bump into each other in the halls and run away. So she's kind of figured out that maybe Lorelai and Mr. Medina have broken up. So Rory ends up having to interview Mr. Medina, and they talk back and forth. It's awkward at first, but they kind of settle into a good rhythm, and she's asking him questions, and it's getting nice. It turns into her telling a story about Lorelai, and Max just says something, you know, oh yeah, that sounds like your mother, and they have a moment where Rory just pauses the recording on the tape and says, you know, I really wanted you to be my stepdad, and he says, I really wanted to be your stepdad, and they say, okay. and they go back to what they're doing. And so she's writing this up as a story, and then there's also all the stuff happening with Jess, and that was basically Rory's plot this week. So that was what happened on Gilmore Girls. It was a pretty eventful episode.
Yeah.
So what did you think of this week's Dragon Ball Z, Kai?
I really liked some of the character work in this episode. There, Vegeta having his own motivations was really great, just him pewing out of there.
I love that moment.
Because he agrees that he will fight them and waits for Krillin and Gohan to leave, and then just books it. And that's really great to remind you that he is still not quite on their side. It's not like he just, the power of friendship has emerged. No, he's still willing to snap necks and run like a coward.
I think it's the closest to a subversion of a trope we get in Dragon Ball Z.
I actually really enjoyed some of Ginyu and Goku's interactions. I feel like they're good dramatic foils for each other because they both are people who really just want to challenge each other on a skill basis. At one point, I forgot to say it, but Jace catches Goku and pins him, like, and gives Ginyu a chance to pin him. And Ginyu just lets him go, like, I didn't ask for your help. And both of them really are interested in doing their all. There's a moment, actually, also where Ginyu says, oh, you're not giving me your full power because you're saving it for Frieza. And Goku's like, guilty! And he's like, no, give it all. I want to fight you, and I want to say I could beat you. That's great. The other great moment, just a lot of great Ginyu and Goku moments, was when Ginyu tries to pose by himself, and it cuts back to Goku, and he's like, oh, like this? And he's posed. I like how you're moving your arms and they can't see you.
I'm doing it because I think it's funny.
And he's like, no, not quite like this. And Goku shifts and he's like, this? Like, why do you do this? This is stupid.
Well, we had, like, badass Zen Goku last episode. And so then this episode we went back to, like, kind of not entirely aware earnest Goku of, like, oh, if I do that, I'll get more powerful? Okay, let me try it. And just back to Goku, who doesn't always understand what's going on, but really likes to fight.
And I did enjoy this Goku better than I normally enjoy him, because I also did enjoy just his confusion, both at the fact that Jace would run off and leave his friends behind, because that just doesn't make sense to him, and his frustration and confusion that Vegeta would snap the necks of fighters who weren't, in Goku's estimation, a danger to anyone anymore. Because you really see that he thinks everyone's playing in their backyard. I mean, people die, people are hurt, but people stick by their friends, people are honorable, people don't hurt each other once they've been beaten.
Goku believes in following the rules.
The Goku philosophy was very much on display here, and I actually enjoyed it better because even though he was a completely different character than he was last episode, which, whatever, fine, great, it felt like we had a more defined idea of who he is than we have had before, and I appreciated that. That being said, the fighting wasn't that interesting. It just happened, and it was there, and then they punched each other a lot.
Especially compared to last week's fight choreography was excellent.
Yeah.
This week's fight choreography had a couple moments, but it generally was just punch loops.
Yep. So that's what I thought of it. What did you think of Gilmore Girls this week?
I thought this was a pretty good Gilmore Girls episode. I think this is the episode that I have enjoyed the most that has still involved Max Medina. I think that really, again, like this, as well as some of the stuff earlier in the season, if you just gave me the Max Medina scenes of this episode without the previous context, he was relatable in this episode. I think that he really sold the genuine regret, but the fact that he's put it together and is ready to move on. Because he really does wish that he could have been a part of Rory's life. But just before that, he on the record, he makes a comment about how, you know, even the situations in my life that haven't turned out the way I wanted, I wouldn't want them to go any other way. You know, something like that.
And he was, for Max Medina, surprisingly responsible for the situation he was put in.
He absolutely was. You know, he saw Rory, and he was kind of shocked when he saw her in the halls. But he was willing to go along with it, and she turned around and left. And so he was like, okay, she's not comfortable with this, so I'm going to leave it.
Uh-huh.
And when she came in to interview him, he was willing to play along. And it wasn't until she mentioned that she was feeling uncomfortable that he leveled and said, honestly, I'm a little uncomfortable right now, too. Right? Like, he was being a responsible adult and a responsible educator in this episode.
And even when he said, I'm uncomfortable, too, it was in ways that he knew that the most important thing was how she was feeling, not how he as the adult was feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. He surprisingly didn't put her in any uncomfortable situations when that has been his MO up to this point.
Yeah.
So I liked that. I gotta admit, I'm a little bored of the Rory and Paris dynamic. I was kind of glad early in the episode when she's like, hey, we both want the paper to be good, so let's just coexist.
Yeah.
And Paris looks like she's going to go along with it. And I was like, okay, cool. We're moving forward here. And then it's like, oh, but she lied to Rory about the time. Which, one, is cartoonishly stupid.
Well,
and two, Rory wouldn't have that memorized.
Yeah.
And wouldn't have that in her planner, her day planner,
because
Rory has a day planner.
Well, and the thing is also that there's obviously an adult involved, and the adult does nothing to send out meeting invites, and that's the editor, student editor's job for some reason.
Or something, I don't know. The Paris plot was a little silly. And Luke, or not Luke, Jess is so silly. He rolls in, and he's a bad, admittedly, they did Bad Boy better than they did in the pilot with Dean, but it's still like, he rolls in, and he smokes, and he wants to play poker and gamble, and he steals a gnome because adults don't understand me, but he also does magic tricks. And he reads, so you know that deep down he's a wise, intelligent soul. Like, I've seen snippets of the revival enough to know that Jess eventually becomes a better character, but his introduction, he's so stupid. He's silly, and he's ridiculous, and I just Roar being like, he read a book. It was like, oh, man. Like, Rory is sometimes naive when it comes to love, but she's not that dumb. So that was a little frustrating. But overall, it was a pretty good episode. I really liked the Luke and Lorelai dynamic this episode, because so much of the show has just been him kind of being her sidekick or vice versa with some of the Rachel.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the Rachel stuff.
Let's just point out that you've already forgotten.
I've already forgotten her name.
And that's how much Rachel will matter from here on out.
Yeah, so it was nice to see them really butting heads over a legitimate difference of their philosophy on how to handle this. Because mm-hmm. Luke's parenting, quote-unquote, philosophy seemed to just be, he's not murdering nobody, it's all good. Whereas Lorelai was like, no, look, you need to know these things. But she also doesn't always practice those things. So we got to see some interesting layers to their relationship that was cool. So overall, it was a pretty good episode.
And you get to see Jess pushed in a lake.
And Jess got pushed. That was great. That's one of the few moments in the show so far that I've really actually laughed out loud at. Because it's this unexpected moment of him just shoving Jess into the lake. It was great. Great bit of physical comedy.
And I just want to quickly say this episode is, I enjoyed it, but it's really deeply frustrating.
I know, it's deeply frustrating knowing where the revival goes.
Yeah, no, this is for people who watch Gilmore Girls, seeing Rory take a stupid article and pursue it is something you don't see from her later on when she gets more privileged. And I don't even mean the political way of privilege. She just gets more, she gets more money, and she gets more used to having the money and privilege and power, and it's just not interesting. And when you see her in the revival, she's given up any of the ambition you see here, while her ambition is really, it's really engaging, and I really like her for it. And even just the way she deals with Jess, the way she defends her mom, the way she defends her town, is really great, and I miss that as it goes forward, and I'm sorry to know that I'm going to have that less. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah, I know, unfortunately, she eventually becomes awful.
So, do you have any questions about this episode? Because I think that there were some interesting developments in the Dementia Town theory.
I want to backtrack.
Yeah.
I got to backtrack for a minute here. Taylor Dosey leads a troop of Boy Scouts.
Okay, yeah, that's a fair question that will never come up
again. I was going to say, why have we not seen this before?
I don't think it ever comes up again.
That was a little silly. And it's less a question and more a frustration. I kind of wish that we'd seen some of Rory's research and how she turned this parking lot story into a moving piece on the impermanence of life.
Yeah, and also, that's not... Obviously, high school journalism is not a high height of high school journalism, but that's not how high school journalism works. She was given a factual piece and turned it into an opinion nonfiction essay. And that's not a thing you're supposed to do. That's not good journalism.
No, you just report the facts.
Like, but we do go directly from she looked up a history of concrete to she wrote a moving nonfiction essay about impermanence. And it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. I don't know enough about it to really be able to say, but I feel like high school newspapers don't work like that.
High school newspapers do not work like that. I only have the example of one high school newspaper, and the Healdsburg High School newspaper was not the most prestigious paper in the Tri-City area. But we still did things. I mean, for one thing, journalism is often a class instead of an elective.
Yeah, I know that.
Even if it's an elective, when I was in journalism, at least, we were given a week to turn in each piece. We put out papers once a term, and I suppose it could be more often if you're putting out a paper more often, but it probably, if you're putting it out more often, would have a larger staff than about 8 people. So the overnight deadline for a newspaper is not a thing. The fact that the advisor seems to have, like, give Paris full control and doesn't notice anything petty that's going on when she's purposefully giving someone bad assignments. Like, this is all questionable.
Yeah. Yeah, so Dementia Town.
Dementia Town, yeah, we'll get back to it, sorry.
I mean, I feel like we just really saw it through Jess's eyes when he arrives at the diner and then he steps out and there's just that slow pan to a song about how this is hell.
A nice happy song
about how this is hell. And you see, like, a mother and daughter both dressed in the same ridiculous outfit, and people, like, putting flower rings around the lampposts, and I don't know, there was nothing overt about it in this episode, but any time that we saw things through Jess's eyes, there was definitely a low-key, just a nice smooth peanut butter layer of Dementia Town, just all
even
over
just
the episode.
Even just walking into the kitchen and seeing these two people he's never met before asking him to try a Meyer lemon.
Yeah, to eat a lemon.
Like, and don't get me wrong, Meyer lemons are amazing, but I don't blame Jess.
Yeah, I just, I don't think I have any more questions this week. What questions do you have for me?
Okay, actually, before we do that, I want to go back to a previous question.
Okay.
For listeners, this will be a while back, and even the comment I'm referencing is a while back, but I had asked what the Dragon Balls can and can't do.
Yeah.
And we did have a comment this week for us on the
blog. Oh, yeah.
From,
I know where you're talking about now.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about now, from AmiYumi. And they basically pulled out the point that consent should be taken into account with Dragon Balls.
And consent absolutely is taken into account with the Dragon Balls.
Specifically, if the person you're wishing the thing on is okay with it. So people would probably be okay with being wished back to life, but they wouldn't be okay with being wished to death.
Yeah, and this will come up a couple times. Obviously, I can't say too much without spoiling it, but there's more than one occasion where somebody is wished to a certain location or wished back to life or whatever, and the dragon just says, he said no.
Yeah.
And that person just, you know, for whatever reason, does not want to have that done to them. And so, yeah, that might relate in the power of, okay, you can't force a wish upon somebody who's more powerful than the Dragon Ball's creator. So that definitely could play a part in the Dragon Ball's capabilities.
Yeah. So that was something cleared up, and I just wanted to say thanks. So I have two questions. One was in the episode, Ginyu says, and I thought this was an interesting piece of world building, is that Goku probably has some sort of mutation like us. I know what your answer is going to be, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Will we ever get more information about what mutations the Ginyu Force had or how they got them? Oh, you look so happy to give me this answer. It's no, isn't it? Oh, it's no.
It's no. I'm sorry. I wrote that down too.
That's cool.
That is cool. I'd totally forgotten about it.
I want a reason why Captain Ginyu looks like the leader from the Hulk comics mixed with Glalie the Pokemon. Like, is that part of his species? Is that his mutation? Is that why the Ginyu Force is so strong? Where did they get this mutation? None of this?
None of this is ever going to come up. In watching it through this time with you, I've realized what I really want. And what I really want is a spinoff. I want a prequel. I want a Vegeta prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Just like 13 episodes, maybe 26. I want a Vegeta prequel that is just Vegeta navigating the Frieza Empire, getting more development for Kui, for Dodoria, for Zarbon, for the Ginyu Force, learning about these mutations, getting to know a little bit more about Vegeta's past when he was first under, you know, the employ of Frieza.
Because that didn't go well.
That didn't go well, you know.
I'm sure.
Also getting more development for Nappa and Raditz and everything. And fleshing this out and then having it end with Vegeta realizing that, you know, getting the three of them together and saying, hey, we need to overthrow Frieza and return the Saiyan Empire to its true glory. And then the last scene can be them discovering some kind of hidden cache of information that they'd been going for a little bit. And at the end, it could be like, oh, there's another Saiyan left. Like, oh, what's his name? Kakarot. Roll credits. There. 13 episodes. Amazing. That's what I want. We're never going to get it. I'm sorry. No. That question will never be answered.
Captain Ginyu specifically said, they don't call me Captain Ginyu for nothing. Is the something just that he's a captain?
He is a captain, and his name is Ginyu.
Great! Cool, that line was wasted.
I think that really the best question of this episode was already asked by Vegeta.
Oh, no, that was my next question.
Oh, okay, you said you only had two questions.
Yeah, I added that one.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think there was one really great question that was asked for me by Vegeta in the episode. And I will use his exact wording. Sorry, Mom. What the hell is a Shinron?
I really loved that scene because Krillin just mentions, you know, yeah, whenever Shinron gets summoned, the sky gets really dark. And Vegeta goes, wait, what the hell's a Shinron? And Goku...
It doesn't get answered!
Goku and Gohan and Krillin just keep talking in their own special vocabulary from their shared experiences. And Vegeta's still just like, what are you talking about? Wait, what? There's a password? What's a Shenron? What? And they just ignore him. And they all go their separate ways. And Vegeta goes, wait, no, but seriously, what's a Shenron? And it was a nice moment of comedy for Vegeta to just be completely out of the loop. Utterly out of the loop.
Well, because he always is so cocky that he knows things. And then he's like, wait, there's stuff I probably should have asked some questions.
Yeah, I probably
not everyone got the information packet.
I probably should have some more information.
So? What is a Shinron?
Shinron's just the name of the dragon that is summoned when you bring the Dragon Balls together.
Cool.
Yeah, no, that's all there is to it.
Cool.
Do you have any other questions, or is that it?
No, that's it.
Okay, do we want to swap anybody this episode?
I want to swap Jess and Vegeta.
Jess and Vegeta? Yeah, that's an easy one.
Yeah, no, it's an easy one. They're both angry. I want to put Vegeta on a tiny, plinky human planet and have him have to deal. And then get chucked in a lake. I want to see Jess being surly all over the Dragon Balls. Like, and just, why would... Like,
all right, I'll take the captain. You've been gone to near death a few times. You can probably take the guy on the left. Yeah, I'm not doing that. And he just walks away. And then Goku pushes him into a lake.
Also, just... I can see him having the same confusion over the happy, shiny world of Goku as he does about the happy, shiny world of Star Solid. Like, why didn't you kill that guy? That guy was gonna... Okay, fine.
Okay, whatever. Just lights up a cigarette.
Who do you want to swap now that I took the obvious one?
Yeah, you took the obvious one. I think I want to swap Jackson and Suki. With Ginyu and Jace, rather, because the only thing weirder than "Hey, try this lemon" would be for Jess to walk into the Gilmore house and just see Ginyu Force go in their weird poses, just posing in the middle of the kitchen. I really want to see that. And then similarly, I want to see Jackson and Suki, you know, trying these different plants and fruits from the Namekian homeworld and sharing and thinking, oh, this is great, what would we go with here? And Goku just watching, like, wow, this weird, like, they're doing some weird kind of herbal, like, remedy technique that must raise their power level. I bet these two are really strong. And just trying to puzzle that out when it's just them being weird.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Okay, I think that's a great swap, and that's a great week for this episode.
Yep, so thank you for listening. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on the episodes, on our podcast, anything like that. So feel free to drop us a comment on Facebook, Gilmore Ball Z. Shoot us an email, gilmoreballz@gmail.com. Our WordPress is gilmoreballz.wordpress.com. Leave us a comment. You can tweet at us, @GilmoreBallZ. We also have a subreddit, which is rgilmoreballz, and a Tumblr, which is gilmoreballz.tumblr.com. Also, please rate us on iTunes, rate us on Stitcher, Facebook, anywhere else where you get your podcasts, anywhere else you can leave us a rating. Share our Facebook page, tell your friends, get the word out. We really love seeing people bringing their friends in and enjoying this stupid little podcast we make together.
And we have one special announcement. Next week, we are going to have a special episode.
Where it's true.
Not only is it one of the most ridiculous episodes of Gilmore Girls.
My understanding is it's a rather iconic episode of Gilmore Girls.
Iconic is kind of a strong word for Gilmore Girls, but sure. But also, we will have our very first guest. So come in next week, see who that is, see what it's like.
Yeah, we're not sure what it's going to be like either, but hopefully it'll be a good time.
It'll be a good time.
So tune in next week for Gilmore Ball Z. So, how much higher will Goku's power level climb? Can Jess cause even more drama in town? And we'll do you one better, Vegeta. Why is Shenron? Sure hope that reference isn't dated yet. Find out next time on Gilmore Ball Z.